You're listening pretty late, and this is the second installment of Semper Film, where we watch military movies with our favorite Marines, which are actually all the Marines, but we have Sergeant Paraka, who was our very first guest as a wonderful introduction to what it means to be a Marine. So, Sergeant Paraka, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Patty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And who did you bring along with you today?
Sergeant Mark Kodwaka and Sergeant Mark Seidel.
Both of you introduced yourselves as Sergeant K and Sergeant Sadale.
Yes, ma'am.
And then,
yes.
So did you change your name, Sergeant K, to make it easier for other people to address you?
I did. Karwatka is a little bit harder for everyone to pronounce, so I was like, hey, just call me Sergeant K.
And what is the origin of Karwatka?
It's Polish.
It's a Polish name?
Yes.
Well, you're in Chicago. I think they would appreciate you saying your name.
I would, but then, you know, everyone's like, huh? Well, like, how you say it and everything like that. So I'm like, hey, just call me Sergeant K and you're all good.
Are there any other Sergeant Ks? Are you the only one? Okay, good. Thank God.
Do you have that on your uniform, K-A-Y, or no?
No, it's on my uniform, straight Karwatka, but I'm just like, hey, once again, Sergeant K.
Am I saying it correctly, Karwatka?
You are.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. And Sergeant Seidel, who you also have said your name different ways to me, two different ways.
Have.
What do most people say?
Seidel.
Seidel.
But I like Seidel.
Because you are from?
Mississippi.
And that's not why, but you take your time with it, stretch it out.
I do.
You put some importance on it.
It's a lot different being here in Chicago because that's the first thing anybody says. Where are you from?
Because we love accents. If you were from Australia, we'd be enchanted just as well.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, you guys, for coming in tonight. Sergeant Paraka, you had told us originally when we first met you that you had not seen a whole slew of military movies. I think the ones that caught me off guard were Top Gun and A Few Good Men.
Yes.
So those are still on the slate to watch at some point.
They are.
We actually started watching a few moments of it before you got here tonight.
Oh, really?
Because it is the anniversary of Top Gun this
year. Yeah, we saw the first 10 minutes of Top Gun.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's kind of nice.
And your fellow Marines had both seen Heartbreak Ridge. They told me that. And so we had started up Top Gun, but it turns out you had seen Heartbreak Ridge.
Yes, I have. One of the few.
So the only person in the room that had not seen Heartbreak Ridge was Craig Collins.
Yeah, I had not seen that movie. It's a Marine movie, so I imagine that's why all of you guys have seen it. This is not an Army movie. It's not any other sort of military. This is Marine specific.
So is A Few Good Men.
That's true.
But
that's
true. It's also not a combat movie.
Right.
Yes.
You know, when I was in the pool program, they actually had this playing on a loop in the recruiting substation.
Oh.
So when we'd be sitting around waiting to start PT, we'd be catching a couple of parts of it. And
with all the languages, all the language and all the references
built
intact.
Character.
Built character. Okay, so I am a big fan of this movie, and I don't know why. I was a kid when I was really little when I saw this, and it holds up. And so Craig, as a first time, I turned around to you at one point. I went, I am so happy,
right? And you said you were so jealous of me because you wish you had never seen it before.
I wish. Well, I don't
it could
know.
Be your first time.
I think it. Yes, I wish it had been my first time. But I also, it's interesting having seen it as a kid, and when I was a kid, apparently not shocked by the language.
No.
However old I was.
Or the terrible, horrible things they say.
They say some really reprehensible.
They do.
Okay, so let's go back. First of all, Heartbreak Ridge is a movie that was made in 1986, before all of you were born.
Yes. Yes.
Craig?
No, I was born.
You were born? You were born?
I was around. I was one.
All right. So none of you have one, either a memory of it when it came out or of Grenada. For that matter, did you guys learn? Because that is the mission that they are sent on, right? Ultimately, is Grenada. None of you did you study that as a Marine? Have you guys? Because I don't think it was a Marine mission.
It is one of many things we study. So yeah. It's kind of
because it's a small piece of the Marine history. Obviously,
it is. Yes.
There were students that needed to be rescued, and I was trying to do some quick research while we were watching the movie. I didn't even really understand what happened in Grenada, which was that the Cubans and the Russians there had been a coup in the late 1970s taking over the government and trying to turn it into a communist. Is that familiar to you?
No, but it sounds right.
Yeah. She did a history thing.
I'm not a history major.
Nine helicopters were lost in that, and also I believe there were 19 soldiers that were killed in that battle. So it was a serious, and there were many lives that were lost on many sides. But the beginning of the movie is pretty delicious. Would you say? I mean, and by delicious, I mean there's so much fun going on from the moment the movie opens.
Now that I know what you meant
by delicious.
Yes.
So we start in a jail cell.
Yep.
And you hear this guy kind of talking about what it was like to serve. Have you come across any hardened veterans who, like older guys who will tell you stories? Do you not want to talk out of school?
And actually, even more so than that, specifically, an older guy who looks like he couldn't take a young buff dude and then would just destroy him in a fight. Is there anyone that exists that is the Clint Eastwood character in this movie?
So I will tell you, as a recruiter, most of our day is spent in the office. And there's a lot of Marine veterans that will come in, ask for bumper stickers, or even just to come in to tell their story. Can some of them take them out like that? I don't know, but they do have the same stories. So that's something cool that I've realized here on recruiting duty, for sure.
That you've got those guys out there.
Oh, yeah.
That absolutely have some great stories and really have so much a part of who you guys are now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's it is a movie that starts with that confrontation of old versus new. And it plays throughout the entire movie. Yes.
Yeah, and Clint Eastwood just keeps beating the crap out of everyone. No one can take. He's the James Bond of the movie.
He really is. Yeah. Did anyone notice that he really didn't need to have any scar makeup?
No.
He didn't need. Did he need any of that? He's so leathery. There's a moment where he goes in to like hug Marsha Mason, and there are like lines on the back of his neck. And I'm like, why did you bother using makeup? Look at you. You are a walking scar, my friend.
That's why they call us Leathernecks.
Yep, that's it.
Are the Marines the Leathernecks?
That is correct.
That's another movie we have to watch then. I believe it's a John Wayne movie.
You know, I was also a little bit confused as the movie progressed. All the people who hated Marines, was that ever something that was actually accurate historically? Did people dislike Marines specifically? They kept saying
jarheads. Yeah.
Right, in a negative way, and other things they said about the Marines as if for some reason at some point we disliked Marines.
Right.
And I can't remember that.
I don't.
I
ever
can speak
being
on
fact.
That. My dad was actually in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So after he got back and came back to Chicago, he had to wear a baseball cap everywhere.
Because they saw his shaved head?
Yep. Because if they saw the shaved head, they would spit on him. They would call him bad names and everything like that.
Right.
So he didn't really talk about, like, hey, I'm in the Marines or anything like that. Kept to himself, only to the family and to the friends that were actually in the Marine Corps also.
And was he one of the reasons that, I mean, I'm guessing that was a big influence on you growing up.
Yeah, it was. He would have his stickers everywhere in the garage. He always spoke about the Marines. He still had a sea bag full of uniforms and everything like that. So he was one of the, him, my cousin, and my uncle. They're the top three Marines in my family, so I'm like, hey, I want to do the Marines.
And not to jump to the end of the movie, but when they all come home at the end and there's like a parade happening,
the band and everything,
is that really realistic now too? I was curious because that's something that's missing that we should be doing all the time. Mm-hmm. Whenever any service people come back, there should be a band and a parade and
celebrating our three Marines
right
here.
Guys, yeah.
I think Sarn Sadel can talk more about that.
So yeah, so I have been on two deployments, one to Iraq, one to Afghanistan. The one in Iraq, I came back in 2009, and that one was pretty much just like the movie. There was a band. There was pretty much the whole nine yards that you saw there. There's bleachers put up and everything.
Where were you? Where did you arrive when you came back?
I'm sorry?
Where was that, where there was a band and the bleachers?
That was actually in Cherry Point. So
at Cherry Point, where were the same location the movie shows? Okay.
So I was actually stationed in Miramar for my first duty station, and so when we came back, we had to stop in Cherry Point, and then we take a flight from Cherry Point all the way back to Miramar.
Okay, and Cherry Point is in North Carolina?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty much spot on for that one.
Really?
But
oh,
the second deployment to Afghanistan, mm-hmm, I came back. It was like 1:30 in the morning, and so it was just like the real close family members. We got off the bus and then went home. So
quietly went home.
I think it has a lot to do with what time of day you come back. That's the only thing I could think of.
Right.
But
it shouldn't. It really
shouldn't. No.
We really should be grateful all the time for the stuff that's going on. Yeah. And it was so interesting to see that in the movie because, you know, growing up, that's not something that I remember a lot of seeing a lot of or feeling that way, I guess. But
you know what we should do? You know that there's a, there are, are you familiar with honor flights?
Yes.
So there are veterans of World War II who, you know, men and women who served, and they are flown from, I believe, from Midway Airport.
Yeah,
we'll do some research because we should get involved in honor flights.
Yeah.
And now they're also bringing veterans of the Korean War to the memorial in Washington, D.C. So they fly, it's really like a one-day trip. And then when they return, they have a band and everyone cheering them and welcoming them back because they are veterans who we're losing veterans every single day, obviously.
Yeah.
And as we approach Memorial Day, I think it's important for everyone to, again, is it weird, I would say, you know, tell someone in uniform, thank you for your service. Is it weird when someone does that, or do you appreciate that, or is it not happening as much?
So to kind of answer all your questions,
there's so many. I know, I think we should do honor flights, and also we should say thank you. Yeah. When you're in a uniform. Yes.
It really depends on how you approach me. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna speak for myself. There's really a blanket statement that you can come out with that kind of seems unoriginal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your service is a little bit. Thank you for everything you've done.
That would.
Thank you for doing what most of us can't or won't do.
The last two would mean a lot more than the first one. But really, it's all about the gestures as well. A handshake, mm-hmm. I think, speaks more volume than any words you could say. But I will say, overall, anytime that someone walks up to me and shows their appreciation in any way, I love it. That's, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, and I'm glad to hear that. Sergeant Paraka?
Yeah, so when people say thank you for your service, and they're just walking by casually, or they don't have an expression on their face, I feel like they do it because they think they have to. They don't have to.
No, I think, but I will say this, because I always want to say something, mm-hmm. and then I feel kind of like stupid. If, like, for even doing that. So if someone does it, it's because they do want to. I will just say that. Because they're actually glad that they even said anything, like anything came out of their throat. Because from, no, really, because for me, it's like, it does seem so trivial. But I think the people that say it really do mean it. Because they don't know what else to say to you. They really are not brave enough or courageous enough to have done what you have achieved.
I will go ahead and second what Patty's saying. Because I have family in the military, always say thank you for your service, but sometimes it's the only thing that I can get to come
yeah.
out of my mouth.
So nervous.
I want to say more things because yes. I just can't fathom doing what you guys do. Mm-hmm. And so all I say is thank you for your service.
Thank you. Then, yeah. So please.
And, well, that is good to see it from the other side.
Yeah.
It is.
We're intimidated. You really have done so much, and we know that.
On the other hand, when people come up to you, they shake your hand, they look you in your eye, and they actually take a moment to kind of ask you a little bit more about what you do, who you are, maybe just where you're from. Even if I'm
busy.
Oh,
that's great to know.
Even if I'm busy and I don't have time to have that conversation, it still makes me feel like they care a little bit more rather than just as they're walking by without an expression on their face.
I would make time to have that conversation.
Oh, that is good to know.
Me as well.
Everybody. By the way, they speak for all Marines. And so if there's a particular Marine out there that doesn't want to stop and talk, Sergeant Paraka and Sergeant Side Dell has spoken for you.
You got it.
Well, I do. I think that I always want to say something and I really do believe that most people feel that way as well. And it's overwhelming. There's so many things that we are grateful for. So please know that even in silence, people are grateful for what you do.
I believe it. I really do.
No, and even going back to the movie for a second, when they actually go into combat at the end of the movie, I hope we're not spoiling the movie. It's been out for a little
1986,
while. Yeah, for anyone that hasn't seen it.
30 years
right,
ago.
We gave you some time.
I think we can do that.
When they actually go into combat, even that moment for me, from someone who's never been there, but I do, again, have family that I know have gone, it's such an intense moment to think that this is actually what you guys do. It's so hard for us to fathom it. Mm-hmm. I know what you do. I know what you're trained to do. But the fact that you actually go and do it is the last little part that even in the movie, seeing it happen after we get to know these characters is still a little jarring. It's still a little bit, okay, this is really what it is.
Let's take a step back for a second. Let's think about the beginning when he first walked into that platoon and the way they conducted themselves and how he had to act toward them as a leader. And then all the things they went through to progress to that moment where at the end they accomplished the mission and now they have that brotherhood.
Right.
And it was unspoken. It wasn't, hey, I love you, brother. But they knew he was sitting there. He was smoking a cigar and he felt the brotherhood inside.
Right. Yeah.
And
the pride of that.
I think that's something that still happens today and people need to realize.
Well, so the beginning and the end of the movie are two. You're right. I mean, the journey of all that is interesting. Clint Eastwood, I think, actually did a great job of bringing so many moments. We were outside talking about this on, we went for a walk and we were talking, taking in the movie. But there are, look, the language is one thing. There was there was one word, and I don't know if I can say it. By the way, so just bleep me. The Marines are not going to swear on
the
air.
Don't say a lot of the words from the movie.
But here's one, and you can decide.
You probably can't say it.
You can decide later. But, okay. But I had never, so there was a lot of references to sexual activity, a lot of homosexual activity.
Well,
but he said something like, I've banged more quiff.
You can't say that word.
I don't know what, I've never heard.
Patty was officially bleeped.
But I've never heard that one before. I've heard of a queef, but I've never heard of a quiff.
Okay. None of this is going to make air.
Oh, no.
No, it'll all be.
No, it's fine. I told the Marines that I would say things for them.
Yeah, good.
Because,
cool.
In order to make, we want to make sure that they present themselves in the best manner. I don't have that responsibility.
Not advocating some of the things that they say, but does it build camaraderie to really kind of break down any sort of walls with you and the people that you go to training camp with? Are you in to be that close that quickly to say
whatever's in your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah. They heard me swear like a Marine out on the...
I'll say it depends on the unit. Mm-hmm. It depends on what your unit's mission is and who you're going to be around on a daily basis, the size of your unit.
Right.
And, just what you're there to do. With a reconnaissance platoon, it's real small. They have a distinct mission. They're going to go in and they're going to go out. And those guys have to be the strongest, the fastest, the most disciplined.
Thank you.
Yeah, Craig was very concerned,
by the
recon unit.
Oh, I hated the fact that recon were the goof-offs. Well, I don't know if you guys hated that, but that
they had an answer. They will help you with this.
Tell me.
Well, the thing is, they fight hard, but they also play hard. So when they're home and they're not in combat and when they're not training, they're a little bit more relaxed. Their grooming standards are a little more relaxed. They don't have the high and tight haircuts like some other Marines.
And that's true to this day?
To this day. I mean, now... Let me make this clear.
It's not because they are highly trained.
We're gonna get some recon Marines up in here.
It's nothing like the movie. But let's say their haircuts might be a little bit lower. Their boot blouses might be a little bit lower. They might walk around with their hands in their pockets sometimes, which we're not supposed to do as Marines. But since they're closer with the Brotherhood, they're a little more relaxed. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to getting the job done, they do it better than anybody else.
Well, and Sergeant Seidel was also saying this wasn't wartime in 1986.
Yes.
So it may have even been more lax.
Yeah, because, you got this whole generation coming into the military. They're kind of not really thinking about combat. They're thinking about, being a Marine, doing this, doing that.
Maybe being cool.
Yeah.
Being a badass.
That might be some of it. but
we're talking about 1986.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But in reality, you have this gunnery sergeant who the only thing on his mind is getting his Marines ready for combat just in case it was to happen. So I think that was one of the coolest storylines of the movie is you have this group of guys just kind of hanging out, chilling, relaxing, and this gunnery sergeant, this hard charger, nope, we're not going to do it like this. We're going to do it like this just in case something happens. And I think that was the biggest thing that kind of, for a Marine, you kind of understand exactly what's going on. Because
his intention.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And when we talk about the language, and I don't, maybe this isn't the, maybe off the microphone would be a better conversation to have. But, I mean, I would think that things have changed. Even when I was at the educator's workshop and I talked to the drill instructor about some of the references he made, he was very understanding in my concern for one of the words that he used. And it had never occurred to him. Which was the R word. It's okay. He said that sometimes you get a bunch of retards and, there's nothing you can do. And I sat down with him by the end of the week. And I told the story already on the air, Sergeant Paraka, because I was really impressed with the drill instructor's not only his understanding of it, but asking me questions and wanting to know more about my son who has special needs. And I just wanted him to, I showed him a picture of Declan and I said, just so you know, when you say that word once in a while, I'm not telling you should change the way you do things, but take this into consideration. Just consider this, that this is a young boy who people will use that word toward. And he could not have been more kind. And whether or not that changes him is not up to me. That's up to him and to you guys. You set a standard for so many young men and women. We look up to you and we admire you. So it just pained me briefly that was a word that he used so very casually. But I do think that you guys take that, because of the language that was used in this, that was only used one time in the movie. There were so many other words, so many other references that I think have probably changed since 1986 when it comes to sexual stuff. Would that be accurate as far as some of the, I mean, like, Clint Eastwood uses a lot of reference for Man on Man Love is all I'm saying.
He also did not call it that once. All the things he did call it, it was never Man on Man Love.
I wish I'd use that like a hash mark for like all the different ways he was talking about, not just with men, but with dogs. And
right, seriously.
And you don't have to. This really isn't something you have to address.
Well, when it comes to all male units, you know, you never see females ever. You're training 24/7 with other males.
Right.
And they get bored. And it's just, you know.
So the language they use, right.
The language they use is more relaxed. There might not necessarily be people that get offended from them saying those words, so they don't necessarily have to watch what they're saying as much, and it's just kind of their brotherhood.
Have you heard any of those things that Clint Eastwood said? Because that's some creative language. I wonder if any...
Plead the fifth. Plead the fifth, Baraka.
That's a little old school.
I was going to say.
These days, we're a little bit more... We kind of control what we say a little bit more. There's more rules and regulations, and people get offended, and we're trying to be more professional.
Is it as much? I don't know if it's as much about being offended, but just that we have changed in 30 years as to how we address each other, I think, too.
And whether
that comes from being sensitive or just understanding, too, and I have to believe the Marines have gotten there as well.
Yeah, I think as an organization, we've evolved to be more professional.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. We have more conversation with our favorite Marines because all the Marines are our favorites. We are hanging out with Sergeant Seidel, Sergeant K, and Sergeant Paraka. We're talking about Heartbreak Ridge. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, in the Allstate Showcase studio with our favorite Marines, because all of our Marines are our favorites. We have Sergeant Paraka, Sergeant K, and Sergeant Seidel. We were watching Hoorah. That was nice. Thank you very much for saying that. Can you say it again for me?
Hoorah.
Can you hit that as a recording for us? We just drop that into the show every once in a while. Actually, each one of you can give me an hoorah, whatever way you would say it, Sergeant K. A little bit of pressure.
Hoorah.
That was nice too, Sergeant Paraka. No, you don't want to do it? Do it on the spot. Oh, look how giggly he got.
Come on, Paraka.
He gets really giggly when I tell him how pretty his eyelashes are. We've talked about your eyelashes many times on my show, by the way.
At no point was that part of the movie, though. Like, I didn't. Paraka's eyelashes never made it into the movie.
You know that Clint Eastwood in Heartbreak Ridge would have been like, "You got pretty eyelashes." Okay, so you don't have to do it. Speaking of Clint Eastwood in Heartbreak Ridge, would there ever be a drill instructor, regardless of his experience, that would talk that softly? That would talk. I mean, like, there seems to be a lot of yelling going on in the Marines.
I will say, so at some point, there will probably be a drill instructor talking like that. It will probably be the senior drill instructor, because his job isn't necessarily to wreak havoc, right?
Right.
His job is to kind of mellow him down, talk to him like people, right? So you don't.
Right, because the drill instructors each have a role to play. There's kind of like the over the top.
Yep.
There's the one that intimidates. Yep. I guess maybe through being quiet. I think drill instructor Lemke went through all of them, but I was so terrified that didn't stay in my head.
So they have one that they call the kill hat, and he's pretty much the one that will do the IT, which is incentive training, PT them, make them sweat, make them play games, run and touch doorknobs and such. They'll have the knowledge hat. The knowledge hat's the one who kind of teaches them what it is to be Marine, some of the history and heritage, traditions, and you know, how to roll the sleeves and you know, stuff like that. Then they have the heavy hat, also referred to as the J hat. He's the one that's going to teach these recruits drill. He's going to pretty much be the main drill instructor, the one that's in charge of the platoon, and the other two hats are going to kind of help him out and just assist. So if he says, "Hey, everybody get your two sheets and a blanket online," and he says, "Ready, move," the other two drill instructors are going to be the ones in the faces yelling and screaming at them, and he's going to be in the middle of the squad bay counting down. And then you have the senior drill instructor, who's like daddy. He's the one that kind of takes care of him. He gives him mail when mail comes.
Okay.
And he kind of does those guided discussions like you observed down in San Diego and so on.
Right. And those guided conversations were the one we experienced was about addictions or about overindulging in alcohol, the kind of behavior it can lead to. He also talked about domestic violence. There are some really heavy issues that these young recruits discuss because they are there for 6 weeks. They're being physically trained, but they're also being psychologically trained to become a Marine and also
weeks.
A better. I'm sorry, 13 weeks. 13. Everyone kind of learned. She doesn't really know.
No, you got it. 13.
I got to change that in my notes. 13 weeks.
Nailed it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, speaking of military history, one of the things that you mentioned, Sergeant Paraka, was the location that this movie was shot and some of the places where they show their bunks or their racks are not actually even used anymore. Is that what did you see?
So
what did you notice
in the movie? They said, "Hey, you're being assigned to 2nd Recon Battalion, 2nd Marine Division, mm-hmm. which is located on the east coast of the United States." And the movie was shot at Camp Pendleton, California, right. which is on the west coast of the United States. Specifically, they were in the Quonset Hut building 364, which is in Camp Talega. That's the northern part of the base
okay.
of Camp Pendleton, where right currently it still exists, and it's more of like museums, old school stuff. It's just kind of for looks. Not too many people out there.
Well, what I think is interesting, actually, and the moments I was doing research during the movie was this movie, they started production on this not long after Granada, which was, I believe, sort of the inspiration moment for them. Like, what's our military up to? It was supposed to be a movie about an army, a group of army men, army soldiers. I don't even know what you call it. Now that I've been with the Marines so long, I don't even know what you call men in the army.
Pansies. That's
no,
what
no, no.
No, we're kidding.
No.
We're kidding. The wow. Marines are all laughing. They're no, all no. laughing. They're so pulling back from the microphones.
It was supposed to be about the army, mm-hmm. but they did not like the script. The whatever I guess officers or executives, I don't know who read the script and said this, we don't like the way this reflects the army. It was rewritten a little bit, and Clint Eastwood went to the Marines and they gave their support and also gave them the location of Camp Pendleton. So I'm guessing, I don't know how long ago what did you call them, the huts?
Quonset huts. Yep.
They probably were less used and then became a nice place to film as well. But those are they don't look very comfortable. Are there units like that are housed in Quonset huts? Types situations?
I wouldn't say like units like they are, mm-hmm. But for one of my pre-deployment workouts, we were in 29 Palms, California, and that's what we lived in. It was exactly like that. You walk in, it's just nothing but bunk beds all the way down,
right?
And so you got to pick one, and
that was it.
Hopefully, your rack mates. What's that?
You got bunk beds?
Yeah. What'd you get?
We had cots when we stayed in the Quonset huts.
So, yeah. But, yes, they
must
are
be,
still
must
around.
Be nice.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the cots don't have mattresses on them.
No, they don't.
No. Oh, it's just canvas?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that.
Oh, dear. when you were working in Afghanistan, when you deployed to Afghanistan and
yes.
Iraq, what kind of housing did you have there?
So, the first thing I would say to that is I am an aircraft mechanic, so mm-hmm. I wasn't fighting at all.
Right.
My job was to maintain airplanes, specifically the V-22 Osprey. Iraq, it was a little kind of different. It was kind of an abandoned building that someone had found, and so there's like 9 or 10 of us to this one room. So, I mean, it was all right. No wireless internet or anything. but we each had our own rack. We each had our own space.
Mm-hmm.
I will say the deployment to Afghanistan was completely different. It was two-man cans. So basically it was a big box, if you could imagine it.
Is it kind of, because I've seen some of it where it's almost like the, you know, what you like the semis, like what the semis haul are basically.
They're actually very similar to that, except for if you could take that, what a semi hauls, and cut it into fours, I believe.
Really?
That's what two guys would share out there.
So cans.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, we obviously Heartbreak Ridge is about again this recon unit with the Marines who have decided.
I guess they're recon.
They've descended into debauchery and drinking and playing pool and letting their hair grow out.
Yep.
And Clint Eastwood has to come in and whip them into shape. But one of the things I was asking you guys off the air about was when you have you have soldiers, you have Marines who have seen so much more than maybe a new group of recruits have seen, or even officers who've never seen any action at all. That's really what a lot of this movie is about.
Yeah,
are the officers who like basically came up through academies? And
I kept asking during the movie if some of the characters were realistic, and one of the characters that stuck out was the guy who's a nerd who seems to understand a lot of battle things.
He graduated top of his ROTC
class. Right, but he's never actually fought in any kind of thing, and I asked you if that was a real person in the Marines, if you come across this studied person that maybe doesn't have any experience.
So in our field, that's the we call them the boot lieutenant. They're brand new. Yes, they're an officer. They're appointed over us to be in charge of us. So what their role is to take like charge of the platoon, lead them through different activities, but they're not going to do that without their senior enlisted advisor.
Right.
They're going to have a sergeant or a gunnery sergeant right there by their side saying, hey, this is what you need to do. This is in your best interest.
Right.
Now, if they decide to do something different, That's up to them, but that's what the senior enlisted Marine is there for, is to guide them in the right direction, help develop them into a successful officer.
Because so much of this movie is about new Marine, old Marine.
Yes.
But you guys are really, you're new Marines. I mean, but you are always adapting. That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and we talked about this, that Clint Eastwood keep saying, improvise, overcome, adapt. And you were saying, Sergeant Seidel, it's more overcome and adapt as far as what you...
Adapt and overcome.
Adapt and overcome.
That's it. Because no matter what kind of situation you're put in, you have to know how to get out of it. Really, and the best part that kind of made sense during that movie was when they took the tractor and they overran the checkpoint.
Right.
They didn't have
the
a
bulldozer.
Huddle. Yeah. They didn't have a huddle and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. One of them jumped in it. It started going. Everybody lined up behind it. And it's like...
To give them cover.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of adapted to their situation. And that's what the Marine Corps is really all about, is understanding your situation, your surroundings. How do I adapt to it?
Right.
And how do I overcome the obstacle that's in front of me?
And Sergeant Kay, you were saying you do use the word improvise.
I do.
And in what sense do you think? I mean, because it does, I think it does strike a chord with people, like make something up on the site, on the spot.
So with my job, I'm a Motor T operator, right? I drive trucks.
Mm-hmm.
If something's hanging off the back of my truck and I need to have flags to advise someone that's behind me that, hey, the load's sticking off way where it should be.
Take caution.
Take caution, yes, exactly. Use something to show that kind of caution. So... Use a t-shirt, use a glow belt or something like that just to be like, hey, this is the best we got right now.
Right.
Because we had to think on the spot. We had to improvise. And then we adapted and overcome, and we're hauling down the road to wherever we got to.
How much does that training affect the rest of your lives? Because that's a big thing that I think a lot of people could just take away from everyday situations, adapt and overcome. Is that something that you think you guys have learned from the Marines that has changed the way you're going to live the rest of your life?
I think it just becomes a part of our culture.
Right.
No matter, like Sergeant Seidel is saying, no matter what we're doing, we're always trained to adapt and overcome. I'm a martial arts instructor, and one of the things we teach in our martial arts program is weapons of opportunity. Sometimes you're not going to have a knife or a bayonet or a weapon to shoot somebody. You're going to have to find a rock, or maybe it's a cup, or maybe it's a cell phone. Whatever you have around you that you could use as a weapon to help defend yourself or the other Marines around you, you're going to use it.
Right.
And that's what we train our Marines to do in the martial arts program.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are trained in so many different areas. But one of the things I also wanted to touch on was the relationship with Clint Eastwood and his ex-wife, which I thought they actually did a nice little job of weaving in what it's like to be this hardened Marine who's seen a lot of things, and maybe a relationship was sacrificed because of the way he reacted. And by the way, one of the things, in just 1 week of being at the Educator's Workshop, is that your life is, in particular when you're at the Recruit Depot, your life is very scheduled. Like, you know exactly where you have to be every single minute of the day. You know how long you get to go to the bathroom, how long it should take you to eat. Even for me, leaving after, like, I couldn't think of anything else. Everything else, I couldn't worry about anything. I couldn't get any other work done. I would do my radio show at night. But, I mean, I would imagine once you leave that sort of regimented lifestyle, even if it's just going from the Recruit Depot to the next thing, you have to adjust. And I think I can see how your relationships would suffer as a result of that, or trying to, like, have even the people in your life don't understand what it's been like for you. So just that little bit of it, I thought was really sweetly done in the movie. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think it was well put together.
Right.
And, I definitely think all of the Marines can relate to it, especially here on recruiting duty.
I will say recruiting duty, a lot of people might not understand it, but we don't. It's the complete opposite. We don't have a set schedule. So when my wife asks me, what time are you going to be home? I can't tell her this time.
Right.
You know? And so I can tell you.
Tonight's my fault. I mean, it's WGN's fault. You can tell her.
You also have proof. This is recorded. Yes. It's right happening now.
Put this on record. I am actually enjoying this. But
yes.
Me and my wife, we were together in high school. We met the sophomore year of high school. And so when I was a senior in high school and I told her, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, you know, and she was 100% supportive, right? And so it's one of the little things that you don't see throughout is what the spouse goes through. And I can tell you from day one to almost 8.5 years later, she's still right there with me. And so the movie actually puts that into like perspective for everyone else. You know, when she was talking about
the metal caskets coming home in 1968.
A lot of people look at the military and the Marines especially, and they say, oh, wow, what has he done? But they don't think about the spouse or the children that we have.
Right.
And so I thought that was one of the small details that I was telling you about that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Because I truly enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought it was nice. It was I noticed I got restless, but I was like, this is really nice. But the level of intensity, whether it was funny or there was conflict, and then he really did a nice job with Marsha Mason, I thought.
Yeah, and it really helps you appreciate kind of the full sacrifice that you guys are doing for our country, because
right.
even stuff like that, even having kind of issues that you then deal with your spouse when you come home,
yep.
that's all part of the deal. And it's something that makes us want to at least say thank you for your service.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and that was, did you want to say anything, Sergeant K? I didn't want to keep you out. I feel like that we all keep
you
talking.
Sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I only have a fish at home. I mean, that's
that fish misses
too.
You. He knows who his owner is.
Exactly. I mean, I have to feed that thing tonight.
Yeah.
It's going to be mad at me.
Late for the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of things in the movie. So how much time do I have, Craig? Because I know that we don't.
We're kind of running to our last call. But it's fine.
All
it's
right,
totally fine.
All right, then. So let me ask this question then, because there's so many things. I took so many notes. But, okay, so one of the things toward the end of the movie, someone said, or maybe it was when they were doing their parachute jumping, because you had a question about the parachutes.
Oh, yeah,
right
I was
away.
Curious if the parachute just deploys right away, too, but that was a stupid question. So
no, it's not.
Okay.
I think it probably has changed in training.
Yeah. So real quick, if you can imagine, there's a line from the front to the back of the helicopter. And just imagine there's a line connected to the pull cord on your parachute mm-hmm. attached to that line. And so what you do is you jump out of the helicopter. That line stays attached to there. It's not going anywhere. So it automatically pulls your chute for you, and then it breaks at a certain tension.
Mm-hmm.
And so your parachute's now open. You're not attached to the helicopter anymore. So real quick answer for you.
Wow.
That's how that works.
Mm-hmm. Because somebody does say toward the end of the movie, when I joined the Marines, I thought I'd be jumping out of planes. And I was wondering, what did you think? I mean, are you at the place where you thought you would be when you imagined joining the Marines?
Definitely not. But
yeah.
I think that is the great thing about the Marine Corps. It takes you outside of your comfort zone. It makes you uncomfortable. And I think that's how we can grow as individuals and also grow as an organization.
I agree. Sergeant K? What did you think? Because you had family members who had been Marines, and obviously you're all going to have different experiences.
I thought I was only going to do 4 years.
Uh-huh. And where are you now?
I'm going on 6.
There you go.
And I'm planning to re-enlist. I didn't think I would be where I'm at today with recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I initially signed up, I was like, I want to go infantry.
Right.
My recruiter gave me a different job, which he best thought would fit my needs. And it did. You know, I enjoy driving trucks. I enjoy working on trucks and everything. So it helped me out in the long run. Plus, the constant things I'm doing in the Marine Corps. I also became a martial arts instructor. I became a combat marksman coach. So I teach people how to shoot their weapons.
Craig would like to shoot a weapon.
I would love to shoot a weapon. But that's a big thing that you just said, too, that you wanted to be infantry. And a lot of people that think about Marines probably think that's the only thing. Like, if you go to the Marines, you're probably going to be infantry. And all three of you are sitting here talking about other careers, other things that exist
mm-hmm. yes.
within
yes.
being in the Marine Corps. So that's a pretty interesting kind of point.
A lot of kids, they come into our office and they're like, hey, I want to do infantry, because that's all they really know.
Right.
Know? Then we shoot them like, hey, there's 350 other jobs you can actually do.
Right.
And it widens their eyes. They're like, really? I can actually work on computers? I can work within legal services with them.
I was going to say, when we watch A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men.
We'll be doing
yeah.
that one as well.
You can be Tom Cruise.
And I also want to mention Sergeant K is from right here in Chicago, from Oak Park, you said? Oak Fort. No.
No, I'm working in Oaklawn.
Oaklawn.
I'm originally from Calumet City, though.
Oh, you're originally from Calumet City?
Yes.
Coming right back home. And I know that you've been so many different places. And
Marine Corps takes me everywhere.
There you go. And you, Sergeant Seidel, was this where you thought you would be? What did you imagine when you joined?
So when I joined, it was me and my identical twin brother. We joined together. And the only thing we had in mind was to get out of Mississippi for a lot of different reasons. But really, it was just to mature. Long story short, we never had a father figure in our life.
Okay.
And so it was just to grow up. What can we do to grow up? Oh, there's this. Well, I don't know about kicking doors down and stuff. You know, I didn't want to be that guy.
Right.
I'll be up front. And that's one of the biggest things that led me into the Marine Corps, is you don't have to do that. You can do all these other little things. And so the number one thing that caught my attention was aircraft maintenance, because I did like to tinker with my car at the time. I pretty much any time I had a tool in my hand, I was happy. And so my recruiter said, hey, you want to fix airplanes? Heck yeah, dude. You know? And so the only thing I wanted to take from that was I just wanted to do the 4 years, get that experience to get a good job in the civilian side. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, no, I'm not where I'm at, because I thought I'd be out of the Marine Corps by now, working with Bell or Boeing or one of the manufacturers.
And here you are 8.5 years later.
9.5.
Oh, 9.5. I've heard it both ways.
But but yeah, I mean, I remember the time where it came to reenlist for the first time, and it was either get out of the Marine Corps or stay here. And it was actually a really simple decision, because on one side you have the civilian. All right, cool. But on the other side, you got that camaraderie, the Marine Corps, everything that you've learned for the past, you know, 4.5 years of that time. You could stick with that or you could try something new. And so I just wanted to stick with it. It's just the camaraderie in the Marine Corps is what got me.
Well, it also sounds like you can stick with it and still do something new.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So thank you so much, you guys. It is Memorial Day week. It's Memorial Day week. I know Memorial Day is coming up. You can also go to our website, WGNradio.com, and see some of the military appreciation videos that we have posted, including video from Camp Pendleton when we were at the Reaper watching young men who were achieving their goal of becoming a Marine, and they earned the Eagle, Globe, and Anchor. Am I saying that in the right order?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And it's emotional. It is remarkable. I want to thank Jackie Paulus and Shanae Paulus for putting that together, and really an amazing editing job. But in particular, we want to thank all the men and women in the military, yes, in uniform. Have a conversation with them. Don't be intimidated. We know how many people really don't say it enough. We want to. But introduce yourselves and thank these young men and women for everything that they have done, everything they have sacrificed for us to enjoy our barbecues on Memorial Day. Seriously, it's a fun parade.
Amen.
There's so much more that goes into it. Will you guys come back for Semper Film if you're available?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yes, Sergeant Paraka?
Of course.
I know it depends on your schedule. You have to be here for every single one.
Yes.
What do you think for the next one? Few Good Men? Is that? I know it's such a good movie, but
I
feel weird.
No, it's a great movie.
Okay. I like the
it's
element of surprise. I don't like to know ahead of time.
Okay.
I think it's great. My boss, Captain Mark Adolfson, he was asking me, hey, what movie are you going to watch? You should find out before you get there so you can prepare for it.
All right, so I won't tell you what next month's movie is.
Right, and a Few Good Men message, like you said, it's kind of confusing, but actually a lot of us wind up agreeing with the bad guy, the quote unquote bad guy.
That's the conversation I want to have.
We will have that conversation.
Yes. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Sergeant Paraka, Sergeant Kay, and Sergeant Seidel. I look forward to seeing you again. Have a great evening.
You too,
man. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you.
More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.